Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Among the people on the front lines of confronting the problem. Hello, I'm political editor Craig Dellamore, and this is At Issue. The start of the new year means another year for those who don't have or can't afford secure housing, to worry about how to find warmth and shelter, food, and a lot more. There's probably a lot more help available than many of them know, and probably a lot more homeless people than you'd know from just walking along the streets. We're going to talk about homelessness in Chicago this weekend, the perceptions, the realities, the magnitude, the plans to combat it, and the arguments about what to do. Joining me here in the studio are Doug Schenkelberg, Executive Director of the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, and Richard Dukantenzeler. He is the Executive Director of Franciscan Outreach. That is an agency that provides homeless services at three shelters in the city and elsewhere. He's new to the organization but has 20 years' experience in nonprofit organizations. And thank you to both of you for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Well, Doug Schenkelberg, homelessness is very visible in Chicago. I mean, we see people on the streets everywhere these days, downtown, commercial districts, very often in the neighborhoods. Mm-hmm. But the problem can be hidden, too. I mean, talk a little bit about the problem itself. Not every homeless person is living under a viaduct.
That's exactly right, yes. And you mentioned at the top that there's roughly 86,000 people in the city of Chicago experiencing homelessness. And a portion of those individuals are the people who are on the street who you see when you're walking through the loop or in the neighborhoods. But the majority of those folks are people who you aren't going to see. And we're often referred to as folks that are doubled up or couch surfing. These are individuals who don't have a key to their own home. They don't have a place to stay, and they might be temporarily able to sleep on someone's floor, sleep on someone's couch, shifting in and out of the shelter system or maybe on the streets. And they're experiencing homelessness just like anybody else, and all the bad effects that come with homelessness, just like anyone who's on the street.
And I would think that it's, in some ways, there are other things added on, because if you're bunking with relatives or friends, I mean, there, I would think there's an emotional strain there, too.
Absolutely. There's an emotional strain. There's a lot of, there's obviously insecurity. There's a lot of uncertainty. In the shelter system, at least there's clear rules about what you can and can't do when you're staying with a friend or someone you may not even know that well. Those lines may shift, and there sometimes can be real safety issues for folks.
Richard Dukantenzeler, tell us a little bit about what homelessness looks like from the front lines. I mean, and the kinds of things that Franciscan Outreach is doing.
Yeah, I mean, as Doug mentioned, homelessness sometimes is a little bit more apparent, and sometimes it's not. Many of those individuals and families are living doubled up, but we primarily work with those individuals that are in our shelter, right? We have over almost 400 beds that we provide on a given night, and for the majority, those are full. We provide close to about services to about over 7,000 people throughout the year. So, our services mean providing them with a safe place to stay at night, right? Especially on a cold night like we're experiencing now, but also being able to provide them with the case management services, with the vital supportive services that they need in order to be able to begin planning just their service plan, being able to get back on their feet, being able to begin thinking about how to get back into housing, how to get back into stability.
I do want to ask you one thing, and we'll talk about the services in a moment, but I have seen cases, and sometimes when we've been doing stories on this, that sometimes people don't want to go to shelters because they feel insecure there or worry about their own safety or protecting their goods. How do you – what does a place that operates shelters do to – give people more of a confidence to come in from the cold.
Yeah, I mean, like as you mentioned, that's exactly true, right? Many individuals would rather, for some reason or another, stay out in the street or live in an encampment rather than coming into a shelter, and for very valid reasons, right? For fear of, for safety reasons, for maybe not receiving the care that they were promised, also maybe just for mistrust, right? But we, as one of our core values is we believe in providing a safe shelter. And that means being able to come in, making sure that their belongings are taken care of, that they have a place to be able to store them, right, in lockers, in bins, having adequate staff, right, that are trained on how to de-escalate situations in the event that something happens. But for the most part, it's really coming from a place of understanding that majority of our guests will have experienced some type of trauma at some point or another. Just being homeless in itself is traumatic, but many of the individuals have experienced trauma their entire lives. So coming from a point of being trauma-informed, understanding where they're coming from, just in the way we speak to them, coming to a place from a place that we're talking to them with dignity and respect, that it really goes a long way. So it's really, it's a combination, right, of being able to provide adequate space that's safe, but also having trained staff to be able to really know how to work with these individuals.
I want to talk a little bit about the numbers and mm-hmm. the people. First off, what is the fastest growing group? I mean, at various times, it's been families. I mean, is it still that, or is it mothers with children? Is it, and is the largest? Well, let's start with that.
Yeah. So the what we've seen the growth in is in families. We see a growing number of kids. Within the Chicago public school systems, we have over 16,000 youth who are experiencing homelessness just in that system alone, and that doesn't take into account the rest of their family, right? And so we do see really a rise in family. You know, there's a lot of stereotypes about who experiences homelessness, and a lot of, oftentimes the image that pops into people's heads is the single man on the street, and that's definitely a piece of homelessness, but it is it hits everybody, and we see more and more families experiencing homelessness, be it either single moms or two-parent families as well.
Are single men on the streets still the largest individual group or not?
When you look at including those who are doubled up and you're looking at that broader population, I'd say no. And we're particularly seeing a rise in youth homelessness. When you're looking at folks up to the age of 24, that group is growing on a regular basis, and they're more apt to be the ones who are couch surfing. And so that's becoming a larger issue that we need to address.
And Richard, I want to bring you in on this. You were mentioning the services that are offered. And yeah, I mean, when people come in off the street, they very often are in need of more than just shelter and food. So what kinds of things are you in a position, are yours and agencies like yours able to offer?
Yeah, I think, we view ourselves as a continuum of care, right? We understand that we can't provide all of the services, but we do specialize in certain things and trying to meet our population needs. So we know that when people present and people come walk through our doors, they come to us, and are homeless as a result of perhaps losing a job, right? They also have chronic medical conditions. Some come with mental health problems, and many also experience substance use disorders. So we want to make sure that we're providing them, or at least connecting them with the adequate care that they're looking for. We do have case management services. So everybody that walks through our doors will be assessed. Everybody will be put on this one list, this coordinated entry system. It's a coordinated system that the city uses to make sure that everybody is assessed and connected to housing at one point or another. But we want to make sure that they're connected to the immediate type of service that they're most in need of, whether it's medical attention. We have nurses that are there one day a week. We have strong linkages and connection with substance use providers, making sure that we're referring them there for the type of need and care that they would most benefit from. But also, connecting with employment resources. I think that's key. Many of the individuals that are coming to us don't have income. And we believe that trying to make sure that they're connected either to mainstream services or income is one of the best chances for them to be able to to gain housing or to be able to leave the situation that they're currently in. Mm-hmm.
Doug, are there enough services available for the people that are coming to, you know, the agencies you work with?
No, there aren't. And that's the fundamental issue. I mean, there's great agencies like Franciscan that are doing great work to provide shelter and provide frontline services. But, you know, if tonight everyone who was living on the street decided that they were going to go to a shelter, there wouldn't be enough beds for them. It just, the numbers aren't there. And that's just the shelter system. That doesn't get to what is the long-term solution, which is permanent housing, which everyone needs. And our supply of permanent housing with the supports that people need, be it job training, mental health treatment, substance abuse treatment, is woefully inadequate. And our system is such, you know, we do have a great system through the coordinated entry system and the providers work together. Unfortunately, that system doesn't serve doubled up families. Mm-hmm. So they're left out of that homeless services system. In part because we have such limited resources to serve folks. And so we really need a credible investment in the system, particularly with permanent housing and support, to ever begin to really take a real dent and put a real dent into that 86,000 number.
And this is just a curiosity on my part. How do you find people who are homeless in place, in somebody's house?
So the primary space is through the school system. So when, you know, the school system recognizes doubled up as homelessness and a family, when they're registering for school or engaging with the school, they will let folks know that they're experiencing homelessness. And so that's one way. Now, obviously, that doesn't track folks who aren't connected to the school system. So that's one of the difficulties of engaging folks who are doubled up, because they aren't necessarily connected to a service provider, particularly given a lot of the homeless service providers don't have the resources to serve them because they don't fit that narrow definition of homelessness.
For both of you, how big of an issue is mental illness these days? I think, you know, just because, at least when we're walking on the streets, for example, in downtown Chicago, you get the impression that, you know, mental illness is a major thing, but obviously not in the invisible homeless. But how does that work, and are there enough facilities for them?
I mean, I would say that it's definitely a problem, right? I think just in the country alone, there's obviously a lot of need around mental health services in general. You know, I think there's also a lot of stereotypes that come along that, you know, assuming that everybody that's on the street or in an encampment suffers from some type of severe mental illness. And that's not always the case. A lot of times, many of the conditions that people have could be treated, right, through medication or through therapy. And they just don't have the access, you know, to those type of services. And if you're on the street, you know, you're not, where are you going to be keeping your meds? You know, you don't have a refrigerator to be able to store a certain type of medication, whether it's insulin, but let alone any type of psychotropic medication. So, you know, it really involves being able to have stability to really be able to even begin to address the issue.
Right. And that's, you know, really, you know, gets to the model that's called Housing First, which is this idea that you provide someone with a permanent housing without any conditions. They don't have to be in treatment. They don't have to be have their substance use issues under control, because you recognize that those issues are much easier to deal with once someone is in housing that they know is theirs and they have stability. And that is a proven model and works incredibly well to keep people housed, to keep them from reentering homelessness. And the fundamental issue is we just don't have enough of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're listening to WBBM News Radio's At Issue. I'm political editor Craig Delamore. We're talking about homelessness, and my guests are Doug Schenkelberg, executive director of the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, and Richard DeContin-Zaylor, the executive director of Franciscan Outreach. I'd like you each to tell me something that people need to know about the homeless that most people don't seem to know. And you brought up one about this, the stereotype, but let's talk about some other things that, you know, that for people who aren't necessarily all that cognizant of the problem, what they really need to know about the people they're seeing or not seeing.
Right. So I'd say, like, you know, one thing, like, our data shows that one in five folks who are experiencing homelessness are working. One in four have some level of college education. So, you know, the assumption that it goes against a lot of the stereotypes about who's homeless. And a lot of folks who are experiencing homelessness right now, it's not that they're not working or have no money. It's that they simply can't afford housing, that there just isn't the affordable housing out there that allows them to stay in a place for a long term. They get caught in a cycle of eviction because they're missing rent and they get evicted and they end up homeless, and then maybe couple together another opportunity to be in an apartment and then get evicted again. It's a horrible cycle that they get stuck in. But they are working, and it's simply that they're not making a living wage.
Richard?
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of piggyback on that, we've had some individuals come to us that were referred that were living in encampments, right? They were living in tents, and we have one individual that had been living there for numerous years and had actually been working throughout that same time, and not only one job, but two jobs. And simply not because he didn't want to live somewhere or in an apartment, but he frankly just was not able to afford it. So he, after some persuasion and working with the outreach teams, he decided to come into one of our programs, and he began, we began to build that trust and working with him. And we connected him with, finally, through the coordinated entry system, he was connected to permanent supportive housing. And that was really the only way in which he was able to maintain some type of stability in housing. So as you know, we mentioned, it's not, you know, the typical person that people think about when we talk about homelessness. It's individuals who are working, who are looking to try to improve their lives, but just are not able to because they don't have a livable wage and able to enable or for them to be able to afford, you know, housing on their own.
Well, obviously, one potential solution, maybe not a solution, but certainly a help, would be more money. Mm-hmm. But, you know, right now, state and local budgets are being stretched by things like pension debt and mm-hmm. just the rising cost, the kind of rising cost that you're talking about. The you know, housing costs money, mm-hmm. Treatment for things costs money. Where do we go from here? Let's talk about that.
So I think, you know, there's solutions out there. You know, and we as the coalition have been pressing for the creation of new funding streams. And, you know, we've done this for years, be it, you know, in Springfield and in the city of Chicago, to create dedicated funding to address homelessness. And, you know, we're continuing to push on that here in the city and, you know, hoping to work with this administration to create a new dedicated funding stream that can create that permanent housing with supports that's needed to begin to make a measurable progress on the problem. But as you mentioned, you know, the city's dealing with budget issues. That's, you know, it's in context of a bigger issue that the city's dealing with. And so we're trying to come up with compromises and solutions that work for all parties to move that issue forward.
Yeah. In fact, on our program this just last week, when I talked to Mayor Lightfoot about what kinds of things that could be done and how some people were disappointed, she said, I can say one figure, $1 billion, which is $1 billion was the deficit we were facing when we came in. Mm-hmm. And there's no way around that and being able to do everything that we want and need to do. So, I mean, it sounds like a frustration. And I would imagine that frustration, Richard, is being translated down to the street level.
Of course, yeah, it is. And I think we, as providers, we all recognize that the only solution to ending homelessness is additional housing, right? And we know that requires additional resources and funding. However, you know, we as providers, I mean, we understand that we have to operate as efficiently as possible, right, with the limited amount of funding and resources that come our way. But we're always looking at innovative ways, you know, to be able to address homelessness and partner together and work together with the coalition and various other partner organizations and making sure that we're voicing, you know, our concerns and continuing to push, you know, the just bring the attention to the problem, right, to the issue, and trying to see how can we bring additional funding.
I have to think that agencies and advocacy groups like yours are in an odd position because you're dealing with an administration that, for all, you know, purposes, agrees with you on the goals.
Right, right.
And in many ways, and Mayor Lightfoot doesn't deny that, you know, in her campaign, she said, you know, we've got to do something and here's what we got to do. But you are, I mean, you're getting resistance
right.
from the administration. And also, there's a conflict now between the Lightfoot administration and lawmakers in Springfield who are saying, we're not going to approve any of the tax changes that the mayor wants unless we get a bigger commitment for housing. How is that playing out in your community? Because I think, you know, fighting the fighting obviously makes people angry,
right?
But on the other hand, you're fighting with your own choir.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. Like, I think, you know, Mayor Lightfoot and her administration, you know, they definitely want to address homelessness. They want to address affordable housing in general. It's important to them. And, you know, we recognize that, you know, there's a lot of other issues in the city. And I think there's, you know, an opportunity to create a compromise that allows Mayor Lightfoot to live out her desire to address homelessness and affordable housing in a big way, and also address the other issues that she's dealing with. And I think it's not an issue of having fundamental philosophical differences. It's an issue of, you know, looking at the nuts and bolts of a plan that can work for all parties. And I think we can do that.
What could bring both sides together? And I think we can entertain all ideas in this, but but really, what kind of a compromise could there be?
Well, I think, you know, the issue is that, you know, when we're looking at new revenue to address problems, be it homelessness or anything else, like, there's a limited number of resources. But there's ways to, like, look at, you know, we've been looking at the real estate transfer tax, obviously, to address homelessness. And you know, there's a lot of different ways you can structure the rates to address for that tax to generate different levels of revenue. And so, you know, we're hoping to come up with a rate structure that generates more revenue than is needed to address the budget hole that can also dedicate money to homelessness so they can serve both issues. And so that gets into kind of talking about, you know, different thresholds for the rate structure and what the, you know, potential revenue streams or the revenue level would be. So I think there's a way to do it. And I think, you know, this work, nothing gets done, you know, within government and these type of issues without folks of goodwill coming to the table and talking through an issue and finding where they can common ground. And I think that's what we can do with this too.
Richard, what does Franciscan Outlook or Outreach, excuse me, need to do its job, its mission as well as it wants?
So, I mean, I think Doug and I were just talking about this, and, you know, obviously it comes down to resources, right? We just, from a system standpoint, you know, there just needs to be enough affordable housing and permanent supportive housing for where, and create that pipeline for our guests to be able to go and receive the type of housing and services that they really need in order for them to remain housed and to be successful in where they're at. Because we know that once people are housed, that's not the end of the story, right? People require additional services even beyond that. So it's not only about trying to get people housed, but maintaining that level of services, that level of support, those wraparound services that individuals need to prevent them from becoming homeless once again. So, of course, you know, resources, just getting also people to engage, right? We would love to have individuals come and volunteer, get to know our guests for who they are, just have conversations with them. You would be astonished by just, you know, what you would be able to learn from speaking with some of our guests and just learning about their experiences and get to know the humanity behind the issue. So just, you know, engaging, partnering, getting to know the guests and the programs, I think that's just a way to really begin to bridge, you know, that disconnect that's happening.
Yeah, I think people probably think if they buy a copy of Streetwise every week. But Doug, it's got to be more than that.
It definitely does. And, you know, the thing is, what I'm always still, you know, having done this work for several years, astounded by is how many people I encounter that have experienced homelessness in their own lives, or family members who have experienced homelessness, or friends, be it through you know, shelter system or, you know, couch surfing. It's having those conversations with folks that have experienced it helps break down a lot of the stereotypes about it and helps people understand the issue in a different way and understand that it's a more complicated issue than they might assume. And I think it's really critical to have those conversations, to hear the stories from folks, and to make it not just about the numbers, but about, you know, people you really know that have gone through this and thinking about how you can help them.
I want to turn for a minute to the to some of the stereotypes, because I've, you know, been looking around, and you know, when they're in other cities, I've seen efforts to ban camping outdoors, and those have gone to court. Some municipalities seem to try to, in some ways, hide homelessness. Are you getting that kind of resistance locally, or are you finding that Chicago may be, I won't say more enlightened, but less hostile to dealing with homelessness and confronting it?
So I'll start. We don't see the same kind of systemic attempts to criminalize homelessness in Chicago that you see in other communities. That doesn't mean that we don't have work to do. And we do see, you know, particularly places where there's encampments, where you'll have, you know, community groups, you know, people who live in the neighborhood will raise their voice, want the encampment gone without much thought to what that actually means for the people who are living in that encampment. And, you know, we always push back on that. Criminalizing homelessness doesn't end homelessness. And vilifying the people who are experiencing homelessness helps no one. So, you know, the important thing is to look towards solutions. You know, we've had a long standing relationship with the city to, you know, kind of help them understand what are effective methods and what are ineffective methods when dealing with homelessness on the streets. And, you know, by and large, we do okay, but we can always do much better.
Richard, what are you seeing? What are you, the people who are in your shelters facing?
Yeah, I would say probably a little different, you know, as far as our city compared maybe to others. And I think a lot of that has come through just education and understanding just some of the barriers that they face. And again, having an understanding that this could affect anybody and some family members or even themselves. But I think just continue to provide that education and trying to eliminate some of those stereotypes. And that they know that if they're living on the street, it's not really by choice, but there's just no other option, right? If there were other options as far as housing or shelter, they would be there.
Yeah, a friend of a former colleague of mine once said, you know, talking to some people who were homeless, that all of us are probably only two or three paychecks away from being homeless ourselves. Right. And maybe if we understood that, we'd understand the problem a little bit better.
That's exactly right.
Well, I want to thank Doug Schenkelberg, Executive Director of the Chicago Coalition for the Homeless, and Richard DeContenzaler, the Executive Director of Franciscan Outreach, for taking the time to be here. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To our listeners, if you'd like a copy of this program or just to hear it again, please visit our website. That is WBBMNewsRadio.com. Just follow the podcast links. You can also find our podcasts on radio.com. I will be back next week with another edition of At Issue, and I hope you will be listening. Until then, I'm Craig Dullamore, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.